What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And I am still Average Ant.
And as always, we have a pretty good show for you today. It was a bit of a down week in terms of big news. There's kind of one breaking NFL thing that kind of rocked the world a little bit. And then just kind of gearing up for some NBA stuff coming in. So, Ant, you want to talk a little more detail about what we're getting into today?
Yeah, so it's officially buyout / signing season now that the trade deadline has passed. So since it was a slow news week in the sports world, we kind of took it upon ourselves to do a little buyout and signing little segment for you guys. And the NFL kind of news that Big Red was talking about was the Joe Flacco trade to the Broncos, so that's something we'll get into. And then a few All-Star Weekend predictions. We all know how All-Star Weekend is, pretty laid back, so our predictions will also be a little laid back.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun. I'm excited to dive into the speculative part of analysis is. But first off, we'll kick the tires on the NFL news. As Ant mentioned, Joe Flacco was traded to the Denver Broncos for a fourth round pick. And just like the Alex Smith trade from last year, rest in peace, Alex Smith. I don't know if your career is ever going to get going again. Hope that leg heals up. But similar to that trade that sent him over to the Washington Redskins last year, it will not actually officially take place until March 13th, the first day of the new league year. So, and I mean, kind of first takes, it was a little surprising. I was surprised he got traded so quickly. First thoughts?
I guess I was more kind of surprised at the destination, really, going to Denver. I mean, all I'm seeing when I'm researching this is a bunch of John Elway trying to relive his glory days headlines. All I see is just bashing on John Elway and how he should be, of all people on this planet, he should be at least capable of evaluating quarterback talent. And as everybody knows, with the Broncos, he hasn't really been able to do that. So that was just kind of my initial research and thoughts on that. It was just silly seeing this, especially with John Elway in the front office and stuff, and kind of a confusing move from the Broncos that we can get into.
Yeah, and I just one more kind of funny thing is the Broncos Super Bowl odds actually dropped to 125-1 from 100-1 after the trade, and the Ravens went from 30-1 to 28-1. I mean, it's pretty funny. They go up just for ditching a backup. Now, obviously, that's for cap reasons. They ditched an $18.5 million contract for a draft pick, but it's comical. I mean, in the eyes of bettors, the Broncos got worse and the Ravens got better. And to a degree, that's kind of true. I think it's a really lateral move for the Broncos. They bring in a guy with Super Bowl championship experience, something that journeyman Case Keenum can't offer. But at the same time, you're bringing in a dude that since 2013 is the Super Bowl win. He's 35th in the league in pass yards per attempt at 6.5, touchdown percentage 35th at 3.5, touchdown to interception ratio 110 to 80, 34th, passer rating 82.3, 34th. I mean, you're bringing in a guy that has played mediocre football for the last 5 years. And like I said, you're bringing in a veteran. You're bringing in a guy that has championship experience. So, to an extent, I guess it makes the Broncos slightly better right now. But I don't think it makes them a playoff team. I think they're pretty stagnant there. It just kind of delays an inevitable rebuild in which they draft a first round QB, or maybe if they're smart, they'll draft a QB this year, kind of later, and put him behind Alex Smith. Kind of like a Lamar or, to a lesser extent, a Mahomes situation. It was really a lateral move. I mean, supposedly the hope is that their new offensive coordinator, Rich Scangarello, can take advantage of his experience in the NFL, and that's what they're banking on, I guess. But I'm not optimistic about it. And supposedly they passed on trading for the goat Nick Foles, in part because he doesn't have as much experience as Joe Flacco. Big mistake, Elway. Nick Foles is a tall white QB too, man. Disappointing.
if I had to choose, I'm definitely trading Nick for Nick Foles over Joe Flacco any day of the week. In my humble opinion, this isn't a good move at all for the Broncos. I think it actually sets them back to an extent because they do take an $18.5 million salary hit, which is still, I think he still has like 3 years left on his contract, Joe Flacco. And you're going from Case Keenum, who I mean isn't all that great, but what do you gain from Joe Flacco? I mean, you gain Super Bowl experience, I guess, but what really does that mean if the quarter if you're bringing in a quarterback who isn't necessarily better, and your one really big hole in your team was that quarterback? I mean, your defense was really good. If you had a little bit better quarterback play, maybe you could have squeaked into the playoffs. But Joe Flacco hasn't had an above average QBR since I think 2012. No, he's only had one. He's had one above average QBR season since 2012 is what it is. So I mean, you're replacing one below average quarterback with another below average quarterback, but the below average quarterback you're bringing in is worth 18.5 million. So I mean, that sets them back. Like, yeah, I guess the silver lining of this is they gave up a fourth round draft pick, which isn't much, but if I'm the Broncos, I definitely would rather have that fourth round pick than an $18.5 million Joe Flacco, who, I mean, he might come out and surprise all of us, but I mean, I just don't see it. Ever since that Super Bowl win, he just hasn't looked like he looked in all the years before that. He just looked like he doesn't really care. He's got his Super Bowl ring. He secured the bag. So I feel like he's just kind of in this state where he's just chilling.
Yeah, I mean, and it's I the only thing I'll say is I don't think that Harbaugh did a very good job of giving Joe Flacco and the Ravens a lot of offensive weapons, but that's no excuse for how Flacco's played the last 5 years. It's really been just it's been terrible. He's had bursts of solid play, but I mean, really, it's just a ton of passing attempts that lead to inflated passing yards and bad QBRs and passer ratings. So I'm still saying lateral move for the Broncos. I do think it has potential to make them slightly better this year, but I don't think it puts them anywhere near being a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, really confusing. God, John Elway, I don't know what you're doing over there, buddy.
I'm not sure if anybody really does. But that'll wrap up our NFL piece for this episode, and we will kind of jump on over to the NBA. Ant, you want to take it away?
Yeah, so I guess this is kind of a segment that I actually really liked. It's kind of out of the norm, not necessarily, or not even necessarily, not necessarily. It doesn't mention really any big names at all. So, I mean, it's buyout market, buyout season. So, I guess I'll get us started with my first buyout slash signing, which is Alex Abrines, who was waived by OKC, making Steven Adams the last remaining piece of the James Harden trade. So, I thought that was a little interesting fact on that. But Alex Abrines is a 6'6 guard. It's pretty much just a spot up shooter. Doesn't play much defense. He's shooting 32.8% from three this year, but 38.7% on his career. And he had his, if you want to call it, breakout season during the Russell Westbrook MVP campaign. I remember watching him that year, and I mean, it was like every other game he was catching fire, getting Russ a bunch of assists. So with that being said, a team that I would really like to see him go to is the Miami Heat. They're on the brink of making the playoffs. They're the 9 seed right now, only like a game-ish behind the Pistons. And they recently departed with Wayne Ellington. And as a team, they shoot 35.1% from three. Wayne Ellington was up there at 36.8, which is around what Alex Abrines shoots on his career. And Dion Waiters, who in my mind would probably get a little bit more playing time with the departure of Wayne Ellington, is at 34.6. And I mean, that's higher of what Abrines is shooting right now, but like I said, on his career, he's a lot better shooter. And it also kind of helps out the shooting backcourt or lack of shooting backcourt, which is Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade off the bench, because they're suspect to say the least on the shooting half. So Alex Abrines to the Heat is something that I'd like to see.
Yeah, I mean, sounds good to me. Like you said, career shooter for Abrines is about 38%. I mean, that's legit, and he's down low around 32% this year, but that's okay because a change of scenery can do wonders, and I think it'd be a solid fit on the Heat or really any contender looking for shooting at Houston, Golden State, things like that.
For sure. So I guess you could kind of take it from here with Alex Abrines or another player you have in mind.
Yeah, I'll jump into Omri Caspi. Yep. Kind of move on. So waived by the Grizzlies. Omri Caspi's kind of an interesting guy. He's kind of bounced around a little bit. He's been Sacramento, had some good, what seemed like might be breakout years, and then kind of inevitably trails off and becomes a solid rotational player that adds shooting. And I mean, that's the most important thing. I think he kind of flamed out a little bit with the Warriors last year. I think a lot of people thought he was going to excel in a bench role for him and was decent, but didn't necessarily do what I think people were expecting. But that doesn't mean he can't add value to for you. He's shooting 35% from three on 1.2 attempts per game this year, which isn't a lot, but it can definitely provide some spacing for your front court, and I think that's something that the Thunder could benefit from a little bit, giving a little bit of shooting and spacing behind Paul George to go with their big bodies and their defensive style. And then another team, kind of fringe contender, the Lakers are in the 9 seed right now. The Lakers need shooting in the front court any way they can get it, and so Caspi, I think, would be a solid fit there.
Yeah, I mean, the team that I would say probably needs Omri Caspi the most would be the Brooklyn Nets. They're a decent three-point shooting team at 35.8%, but that number is kind of inflated because Joe Harris and Allen Crabbe lead the team at 47.1% and 40.5% respectively from three. Deloading is at 37.2%. Then after that, kind of like starts to drop off. So Omri Caspi isn't a guy, like you said, who's going to need a lot of minutes. He's not going to need a lot of shot attempts. So, I mean, I just feel like this fit on the Nets is good because he's not going to need a ton of minutes. And not having a ton of minutes will only allow his good quality, which is shooting, to kind of shine.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Well, with Omri Caspi out of the way, we'll kind of get into another player, kind of polar opposite a little bit, Marcin Gortat, who was waived by the Clippers, old as dirt, 34 years old. He's had a decent season. He's putting up 5 points and 5.6 rebounds, and a half a block in 17 minutes a game at his old age, which isn't terrible.
5 and 5.
Yeah. So a team I would really like him to go to is the Orlando Magic. For this, pretty much the only reason is his rebounding. The Magic are 21st in the league in rebounding. Nikola Vucevic is averaging 12.1, but after that, it falls off. Aaron Gordon averages 7.2, and then Jonathan Isaac at 5.3. And both those players, Aaron Gordon plays twice the amount of minutes as Marcin does, and Jonathan Isaac plays 10 more minutes a game than Marcin does. So having a guy that can go in there in about 15 minutes-ish and give you 5 boards a game would be super good for the Magic, who are currently the 10 seed, 2-ish games around that behind the Pistons of the 8 seed. And rebound, you can't win games without rebounding. So I feel like this move would definitely give them a boost on the boards and inevitably a few more wins in the win column.
Yeah, I think the good news for the Magic is there is lots of big men rebounding available on this year's buyout market. So, I mean, even if they can't snag Gortat, they can find some big body. With Gortat in mind, though, the only place I can really think that I think Gortat's kind of the poor man's DeAndre Jordan. I think a lot of people are hoping DeAndre will get bought out. But at the end of the day, one place that kind of stands out to me is the Warriors. I think DeAndre would, Gortat, similar to some guys they've kind of experimented on in the past, like an Anderson Varejao through the buyout market, or having Zaza Pachulia fill that five slot for them. Now they have DeMarcus Cousins, and so getting another kind of big body to roll in off the bench just for even 10 minutes a game, which is, I think, probably right around where Gortat would sit on any contender at this stage of his career. As you said, old as dirt. So I like to fit on the Magic, and then, I mean, I think the Warriors, again, poor man's DeAndre Jordan. Maybe slide in for some Gortat if DeAndre doesn't hit the market.
Yeah, side note on Anderson Varejao, super sad how he in Cleveland the first year that they went against the Warriors, lost, gets bought out, signs with the Warriors in 2016, and then we all know what happens then. Cleveland beats the Warriors. So, I mean, I guess technically, I don't know if he got a ring from the Cavs
He
because
got
he got
offered one
offered
and
at the
he
Leafs. I don't
rejected
know.
it.
Yeah, he rejected it. So, I mean, that's kind of sad for him. I mean, it's kind of like a Brandon Cook situation.
Varejao was in Cleveland for like forever, right?
Yeah, he spent like his whole career there up until a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll kind of get into another Clipper, actually, who's waived by the Clippers, Miros Teodosic. I'm not going to bother trying to pronounce his last name anymore. I'm just going to call him Mio, so I don't want to slander that. It doesn't roll off the tongue really well, so I'm just calling him Mios from right now, for now. He's interesting because he's a second-year player, but he's 31 years old. He definitely came over to the league a little bit late. But this year, he's averaging 8 points and four assists on 37.8% from three and just over 21 minutes a game. And so, because of the stat line, a fit that I think is ideal is the Rockets. The Rockets are bottom half of the league in both assists and 3-point percentage, which is understandable given their roster. So, I think bringing in a guy like Mios would boost those two things instantly, and it'd be easier for CP3 kind of getting back into the offense. He wouldn't have to necessarily rely on himself so much to create plays because you'll have a guy like Mios who could come off the bench, and you can maybe even run a 1-2 with CP3 and Mios at the same time, so that the playmaking ability doesn't all fall on CP3 and also James Harden too. Because I mean, not gonna forget to mention him. He obviously carries the offense. But off the bench, I think this gives the Rockets something that they're really needing. In a way, he's sort of like Chris Paul. Obviously, not as good, but kind of his play style resembles it a little bit. So having a great value brand CP3 off the bench for the Rockets would be really good for them.
Oh yeah, 100%. And trust me, I love that idea. I think that Milos would be a great fit. It just mainly just because of the shooting. I mean, that's really the biggest thing the Rockets are lacking. I mean, it's James Harden's having to carry him, not because he wants to, but because everybody he passes to shoots up a brick. And with all the injuries, I think that Tadoshik would provide some awesome stability. At the very least in the second unit and playmaking, and maybe even give D'Antoni an opportunity to stagger minutes a little more between Harden and or to not stagger as many minutes between Harden and CP3. Either way, I think it's a great fit. But this is also one I was pretty excited about, and the place that I think that he would be able to maximize his potential the most, I think, is on the Jazz. The Jazz don't have a lot behind Ricky Rubio, and I know you mentioned pre-show that Milos and Rubio have pretty similar games, but I think they're kind of separated by Tadoshik's ability to shoot threes. I mean, he's 37%, 38% last year. He's legit, and so I think that would give, just like you're talking about with the Rockets, giving him a second playmaker. I think that this would give the Jazz a legit second unit, and Tadoshi could benefit from Kyle Korver in the second unit and the spacing with Jae Crowder at the four, and I think really give the Jazz a backup point guard that Dante Exum has failed to be time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, I really like that move too for the Jazz. I mean, it pretty much gives them another Ricky Rubio off the bench, but can shoot a little better. But in terms of the Rockets, I just feel like they need him more, and so I kind of hope they make a move for him. Or I mean,
Yeah.
not just sign him. You have to make a move for him, just because they need it a lot more than the Jazz do. I mean, you can see it. James Harden is having to carry this whole team, And when you get into the postseason or the playoffs, it's not going to be that same story. You can't carry a team in the regular season like you can in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. There's a guy I got for the Rockets that I think fills a bigger hole that we'll get to later on, or I can jump into him
Yeah,
next if you want.
you could take it from here with him.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll stay on. You already know the match. It's the Rockets for me. But this is kind of a potentially unlikely buyout situation. It's Jeff Green on the Wizards. To me, he's kind of the poor man's Trevor Ariza, who the Wizards have for some reason shown that they're determined to keep Trevor Ariza and they don't want to buy him out for God knows why in their tanking season now. Jeff Green is another player on the Wizards that does a lot of the same things that Trevor Ariza can do. And again, the Wizards seem hesitant to let him go. I don't know why, but in the event that they do, Jeff Green's a 6'9", 235-pound forward that can stretch the floor, shooting 37% on 4.2 attempts per game. That's the shooting the Rockets need right there. And he's 6'9" forward that can guard multiple positions. He can run some offense out of the post. He would be a pretty solid pick and roll man in smaller lineups with James Harden. I just think that he fits a big hole, which is defense and big bodies that can cover multiple positions. I mean, in their switch heavy defense, the dudes they have shown they're really incapable of playing good defense. And so it's James Harden can have the offense putting up 130 points a night, but it doesn't matter because they're giving up 150. The amount of leads I've watched the Rockets blow. Just because their offense runs a little stagnant when James Harden goes on a cold streak, and now all of a sudden a 20-point lead is a 5-point game, and you got to play a hero ball, which you can't do in the playoffs. And so I think that Jeff Green is a perfect fit and could provide some awesome lineups with PJ Tucker at the five. Brings in everything the Rockets need: defense, points, 3-point shooting. Perfect match for me is Jeff Green to the Rockets.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Green is honestly a perfect match for pretty much any team in the NBA. I mean, his play style being 3 and D and being a stretch four, potentially you can slide him into a five if you want to go really small, is very valuable to teams, especially in today's NBA, which is why I do like this move. If he does get bought out, I do like the move, the Rockets signing Jeff Green. I think it would give them kind of the boost that signing Gerald Green did last year. Plus some, because Gerald Green is an amazing 3-and-D player. I mean, this year he's been hurt a little bit. He hasn't really had the same effect because he's had to play more minutes. And like, no disrespect to Gerald Green, I like Gerald Green a lot. He's one of my favorite role players in the NBA. But that's what he is. He's a role player. So when he gets too many minutes, his flaws start to become more noticeable. So that's why I think a Jeff Green who can be a fringe starter on a decent team, like we saw in Cleveland. He could come off the bench too. He's a really good bench player. I really like this move for if I'm the Rockets. I'm doing anything I can. I'm flying on a plane, doing anything. Once the second the news breaks, if Jeff Green gets bought out, I'm doing everything in my power to get him to Houston.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you mentioned it. He'd be a great fit on every team, so I think that a lot of teams would be flying on the same plane out to meet up with him. But I do think it's a perfect fit. It just covers a lot of the Rockets' needs. And shoot, maybe they could get a Tadoshik and Jeff Green, but that would push them over the luxury tax again. So I don't know. We don't have to get into that. You know, this is like the fantasy time now.
Yeah. Fantasies don't operate on a budget.
Exactly. Kind of moving on, I guess I'll go into one more unique guy that I think's a really underrated player in the NBA and is again a guy that may not get bought out because the Atlanta Hawks seem to want to hold on to him, even though John Collins is their center of the future. Dwayne Dedman. And I don't think that the Hawks don't really plan to buy him out, but I think if he requested it, then they would, probably similar to Jeff Green. But Dwayne Dedman's legit. He's a rim runner, plays really physical defenses, 7-footer, that's also really good at shooting threes. He's shooting 39% this year on 3.4 attempts, which I honestly had no idea until I was scoping around the buyout market. I mean, it's for a 7-footer to bury almost 40% of his 3.4 attempts per game is that's incredible spacing. I mean, he's basically a 3-and-D center, which is legit. And so I think really any contender would love to add a dude like Dwayne Dedmond. One example I think that wouldn't is the Rockets necessarily. I think he kind of would defeat the purpose of adding Kenneth Faried, who is a big signing. And when Clint Capella comes back, there would not be a whole lot of space for him. So the Rockets are one of the bad fits. But my big fits are the Denver Nuggets or the Milwaukee Bucks. I couldn't really decide either one. I think it would be really cool for the Nuggets to add this kind of defense behind Jokic or Jokic. And shooting to their offense that's already legit. I think it'd be a perfect fit there. And then again for the Milwaukee Bucks, I think he would also be a perfect fit there because it gives the Bucks a backup behind Brook Lopez that's basically another Brook Lopez, plays better defense. Brook Lopez has had a fantastic, incredible year shooting the three this year, and then when you get to the second unit for the Hawks, you could have Dwayne Dedmond there, ready to knock down 40% of his threes. So, I mean, I think those are two legit spots for Dwayne Dedmond.
Yeah, so very similar to Jeff Green, Dwayne Dedmond has a play style that can really suit almost any team in the NBA, realistically. So, I mean, that kind of being said, if he does get bought out, I know this may not be the ideal move for us NBA fans, but I think the Warriors signing him would probably be likely for the same reasons that you mentioned. I think you said Gortat. I think is what you said, to the Warriors or whatever. But it'd give him a more than capable backup behind Boogie Cousins and the Super Friends, their starting lineup. But obviously, I don't want to see that happen. So another team, low-key team, is maybe the 76ers. Because they did, for a person I'll get into in a couple minutes, they did try to make a move for Nikola Mirotic, and in my opinion, a Dwayne Dedmond kind of fills in that void that they're trying to fill, trying to get a Mirotic. Obviously, I think he plays better defense, but I mean, being a 3-and-D center is pretty much making you a unicorn. So I think a move for the 76ers to kind of sign him would be huge for them, and a push and all that. So I guess those are kind of the two teams that I could see him getting signed to.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be exciting on either one of them. I think it would be pretty scary on the Warriors. I think if Dwayne Dedmond went to the Warriors win the buyout market, and once again, hope seems to be lost
yeah.
for the rest of the NBA. But I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, so I guess I'll move on to the player that I said I was about to move on to. It's Frank Kaminsky. It's a really weird situation with Charlotte and stuff. Like, there's rumors of a buyout. More than likely, it's going to happen. But his whole time in Charlotte has been really weird. They've been giving it, they give him more than 20 minutes a game, and he's supposed to be a stretch four, but he's decent at shooting, I guess. So it's kind of just a failed experiment. So if I'm the Hornets, I'm kind of moving on from that and buying him out. So with that being said, like I mentioned, I think the Sixers would probably be the ideal fit for Frank Kaminsky, simply because they tried to make a move for Nikola Mirotic, supposedly, reportedly they tried to make a move. So I guess why not try to get the off-brand Mirotic and kind of run that experiment? I mean, worst case scenario, you could just waive him. Frank Kaminsky still has a big question mark on his back. So, I mean, putting him in a bench role where he's probably like 8th or 9th man off the bench in Philly, backing up Joel Embiid and all of them, would probably be in the ideal situation for him to kind of relax and kind of get out of that shadow of being a high draft pick that potentially is a bust. So I think that'd be a good move for the Sixers and a good place for Frank Kaminsky.
I 100% agree. I really like him on the Sixers. And so, I mean, the only real thing I'll say on this is Frank Kaminsky, you were talking about his shooting a little bit. I saw this tweet That is, he tweeted out after he heard that the Hornets were shopping him, like at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And it's wow with 62 O's. Which is 18 more O's than three pointers he's made in his career.
Yeah, he has this whole beef too going on with like the front office in Charlotte too. I saw, I didn't really want to get into it because it's funny. I mean, Frank Kaminsky, who was an ideal stretch four when he was drafted, who can't really shoot. So, I mean, I'm just going to kind of put it on the high expectations and him kind of folding under the pressure in Charlotte. So, I mean, hopefully, if he does get bought out and signed with the Sixers, he can kind of relax and get back to shooting and making threes.
Yeah, I mean, a second chance. I mean, the 3-point shot was his real trademark in college. I mean, and it unfortunately just hasn't translated, but hopefully a change of scenery can do him some good.
Yeah, for sure. So, do you have any more before we get into our last little special buyout situation?
I'll just shout out Zach Randolph real quick. Hasn't played in like about a year. But he averaged 14.5 points and almost 7 boards in 25 minutes as a starter for the Kings. I really think Zach Randolph could fit anywhere that could use a big man. The Nuggets, Warriors, Raptors to a lesser extent, Thunder, and the Magic, as you mentioned earlier, for basically just adding a body for rebounds. I mean, when he comes back healthy, he's not going to provide you a ton, but just a little bit. So I just kind of want to shout out Z-Bo because he's been in the league forever.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Z-Bo. Real baller. I mean, no doubt in my mind he'd be able to give anybody these hands in a fight in the NBA. I'd really like to see him on the Nuggets. I think with Paul Millsap and having Zach Randolph as Paul Millsap's backup, it's kind of like Paul Millsap plus an older left-handed Paul Millsap. So that'd be kind of dope to see.
For sure.
Right, so moving into our last little guy over here. You know, we couldn't have a buyout segment without mentioning Carmelo Anthony. So, he hasn't been waived by the Bulls yet, I believe, but there's more than enough speculation that he will be. So, in my opinion, real quick, it's just kind of a little sad seeing what his career has turned into. Just how fast the drop off has been. I mean, after the trade from the Knicks to the Thunder, it's just been all downhill on like a Y equals 5x slope on that drop off. So it's been really steep and kind of sad. So I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, I mean it's we're only about like two and a half seasons removed or 2 seasons removed from Carmelo averaging 22 points a game for the Knicks. I mean it's remarkable how fast he's dropped off, and I do feel sympathy for him just because it's really nosedived his whole career and now given him this kind of narrative that'll probably follow him forever is that he's a dude that can't play with other guys. He can't fill another role. He's just stuck in his ego about being a star. And so, I mean, it's sad. And I do think Melo's still got some ball in him, but I don't know how many teams are going to want him in the buyout market.
Yeah, I mean, to get into like kind of the teams that I kind of have on the list for him, the only quote contender, because I don't know if you could really label them as a contender, that are any sort of serious about bringing in Melo are the Lakers. I hope that doesn't happen. I think it would just create a whole nother chapter to the Laker drama that has been going on this year. So with that being said, the team that I really want to sign Melo once he's bought out are the Knicks. It'll help with their tank. He can chuck up as many shots as he wants for the rest of the year. And hopefully by the end of the season or next season, he'll be able to retire as a Knick. So that's really the only reason why I have him signing with the Knicks. Any other team wouldn't really make any sense unless you're trying to tank. So that's kind of my Melo piece on that.
Yeah, I mean the Lakers is the only team I can envision really signing him just because LeBron would basically make them. And I mean in an ideal world, Melo adds exactly what they need is shooting. But Melo hasn't really been able to shoot all that much the last couple years. So I mean, it's there's not a great fit for him. So I do like the Knicks. I would like to, assuming he plans on retiring soon, before the league retires for him.
Yeah. Well, he's on the brink already of the league, pretty much just
Yeah,
shunning him.
exactly. Yeah, and so I think that going on to the Knicks and just kind of returning would be nice. A nice kind of bookend
Yeah.
for what
He
was
said
a really bad stretch.
he'd like to be back in New York too. He'd like to retire, Nick, and whatnot. So I guess it would kind of have a Kobe-esque feel to it. You can bring him on, let him retire, Nick. Give him as many shots as he wants in his last game. See if he could put up more than 20, maybe.
I actually would like to see that. That was so crazy, dude. And just bringing up Kobe's game, dude. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So I guess kind of with the buyout market and our takes kind of set up, I mean, with the buyout market and the trade deadline comes All-Star weekend. So, like we mentioned before, we're gonna get into some predictions, which are laid back, no analysis going into this, just kind of who we want to see because you can't really analyze the All-Star game since nobody really cares when they play in the All-Star weekend and all that. So, first up is Team World versus Team USA. At first, I want to go Team USA, but I'm going Team World just because of kind of the fluidity, if that's a word, that all that the roster has from top to bottom. I feel like they'd just be able to. I think they're going to have some really good ball movement. I mean, everybody's kind of consumed with the dunks and stuff during All-Star weekend in the games, but I'm trying to see some good ball movement out of Team World.
Yeah, I'm going Team USA more just to be contrary than anything else. I'm looking for Kyle Kuzma, De'Aaron Fox, Trae Young, just kind of ball out, do something special, get those dunks that most people do love to see. And then you got the playoff experience from Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum, dudes that are playing like 5 year vets. So I'm not sure how serious they'll be taking the game, but I'm looking for the youngsters to kind of kickstart it and do something good, and then Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum take it home.
And I believe the that game is tonight too, along with the celebrity game, I want to say. No pick on the celebrity game. don't really
Yeah,
know. There
no, we don't even
there
gotta
aren't
go
too many
there.
big celebrities in it this year.
Is Kevin Hart still in
Yeah.
there?
I don't think Kevin Hart is in it. I didn't see his name.
What?
Yeah. I mean, he went like a three-peat for MVP and then vanished.
Ghosted.
Yeah. But anyway, getting into the skills competition. I'm going completely biased with my next two picks. Skills competition, I got De'Aaron Fox, who is a Sacramento King. For those that don't know yet, I am a Sacramento Kings fan, so I'm picking Swaipa. Luka's probably the heavy favorite. Would not be surprised at all if he wins, but I'm going De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, and I mean, I when I first looked at the list, I really liked De'Aaron Fox. I was like, oh, you picked De'Aaron Fox? Oh, he's probably gonna win. But I mean, kind of. And then I originally was thinking maybe Kyle Kuzma just for fun, but I mean, I literally just changed my mind on the spot. I'm going Luka. He is going to continue his Rookie of the Year dominance and take home the Skills Challenge Championship.
Yeah, would be no surprise there at all. Getting into the next kind of contest, the 3-point contest, I'm staying biased. Like I said, I'm going Buddy Buckets, Buddy Hield, Sacramento King, bringing the 3-point contest trophy back to Sacramento, following in Peja Stojakovic's footsteps. Don't know if he's going to go back to back, but he will get this one. So that's who I got.
Yeah, the 3-point contest is actually pretty fun for me. They expanded it to 10 this year. I think there's a few things to watch. So my winner, Steph Curry, I think it's going to be his return to the title. Fun things to watch: Seth Curry and Steph Curry both in it. Seth Curry leads the league in 3-point shooting this year at 48.5%. Dirk's last hurrah. You know, won it in 2006. You never know. I'm excited to watch those few things, and then my call is kind of we're gonna get Steph Curry, we're gonna get runner up Seth Curry. It's gonna be an epic sibling rivalry championship round.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of holds me back on putting Seth Curry in the finals is his whole like shot and how it's not necessarily slow, but it's not fast, I guess. But anyway, that's kind of what I think is holding Dirk back from retiring on top as the 3-point
Yeah,
champ
for
is
real.
I don't know if he's gonna get through two racks because how slow he
That's what I'd
is.
say. He's got, does he got the energy to get through five?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he could get to three and make every shot. So maybe he'll get a chance
Just
run.
call it
But
2020.
anyway, getting into the next contest, the slam dunk contest, probably everybody's favorite. I have Mikal. I have Miles Bridges, Michigan State alum. He has crazy bounce, crazy athleticism. So I guess that's why I got him kind of picking against the favorite, Dennis Smith Jr.
Yeah, I am going just totally balling out with the name, going Hamidou Diallo. Probably butchered the first name, but for the Oklahoma City Thunder, dude was drafted in the second round. He's gonna come out of nowhere, surprise everybody, and put up some monster slams. Just watch.
Yeah, I mean, I hope this dunk contest is dope. I don't remember the one last year, but I know the two before that was Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon were pretty special. So hopefully we can kind of continue that streak. And getting into the last event of All-Star Weekend is obviously the All-Star Game itself. And I think everybody and their mom is choosing Team Braun on this. I mean, looking at the rosters, I don't have them on hand, but I watched the draft and everything. And Team Braun, I don't know what Giannis was kind of thinking.
I'm saying,
His drafting scheme was, I mean, I'm obviously not calling any of these players scrubs, but just the way he drafted was really weird.
I have this guy LeBron. That literally all I do. I found like two or three pictures on Instagram, just of the team comparisons, and I sent it to like a couple people. I was like, "What is Giannis thinking?" You got LeBron got KD, Kyrie, Kawhi, James Harden, and Anthony Davis, and then traded for Russell Westbrook
Yeah, I don't know how you finagle that, dude.
for Ben Simmons. Like, was Giannis? I mean, Giannis has got Steph, Embiid, Paul George, MVP type season from Paul George, Kemba, Chris Middleton. Jokic is great. I love Jokic, but Blake Griffin, D'Angelo. Okay, here's a good summary for it. Team LeBron's aging player in his retirement year, last hurrah, is Dwayne Wade. Still putting up decent numbers, still being a reliable player this year. Team Giannis is Dirk's. I'm sorry, Dirk, I love you, dude. You are incredible. You're old, dude. You're older than the dirt that was Gortat's old, dude. It's gotta be. I mean, if, like we said earlier, if this game had any semblance of competitiveness, it has to be Team LeBron. Like, there's no other way.
Yeah, I mean, last year we actually had a good All-Star game. I mean, the first three quarters were kind of same old, but the fourth quarter kind of actually resembled basketball. So, unfortunately, I'm not expecting we're gonna get the same from this year, but I guess you never know. So, everybody on planet Earth is going Team Braun. I hope Team Giannis can make it competitive at least.
Yeah, I'm 100%. Just as long as it's something fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, with all that wrapped up, got a lot of content out and a lot of interesting things, kind of out of the norm type stuff that we talked about today. So, with that being said, this is Average Ant signing off.
I'm throwing in a big red baller real quick.
Oh, yeah.
NBA and Adam Silver with the Jersey of the
Oh,
Future.
yeah.
That nonsense can change numbers and names as you want it to. That's crazy. If you haven't
Yeah.
seen the video of it, you should go check it out. It's pretty legit.
Future.
But yeah, that's all I got.
Right. Well, I guess I'll see you guys next episode.
All right. Big Red says stay cooking. Signing off.